Mr. Shaw, Reel 10. Now, how many? What was the engine room sort of organisation of staff, personnel on the Calder?
We had the engineer officer, and then the chief ERA, and then, if my memory serves me right, there were 8 ERAs who were capable of doing a watch in the engine room. And we were normally in 3 watches anyway, so what used to happen would be that 3 of you would be watchkeeping, and you would take it in turns for one to be not on watch, and during a trip he'd be doing daily, he'd be what they called a day worker. Any jobs that had to be done, he'd be doing that, you see. And you'd take a turn at that sort of thing. The next trip, then someone else would be doing that, and the person who was doing the day work would be doing the watch keeping. That's just giving you a rough
idea. And how many stokers?
Yeah, I think there were about 20 stokers. Stoker petty officers, let me think now. There would be probably about 8 of those, and usually there would be a chief stoker as well. He'd be, you know, in charge of the stoker's branch, you see.
Now, were there any problems, you know this period before you commissioned, while you were sort of taking out the Calder, were there any problems you were aware of with the engines or the boilers or anything that had to be resolved?
I don't think there was anything special. One of the big differences with the boilers was the fact that on a British ship, if you were to do a boiler clean, you could get in the top drum and remove quite a few of the internal pieces. Now, the American idea was that you didn't do that. They were sort of so you had a job. It was part of my job, because I was a boilermaker, to get in and do this. So you had a job really to remove quite a few of the internal equipment in the boilers, to get them out. We managed it eventually.
How would the Americans do it then?
I don't really know. I think that their periods of boiler cleaning were different from ours anyway, and we get the impression that they just renewed all the stuff. They got it out, you see, and it was renewed, completely renewed.
So they threw it away?
Yes, that's as far as, we don't know this for certain, but that was the big thing as far as the cleaning was concerned. The rest of it was sort of fairly similar, no sort of problems. The layout was slightly different, one or two.
In what way?
Well, one or two different positions of different valves, you know, I mean, that sort of thing. But it didn't, put it this way, it didn't really take us very long to pick it all up. And that was all of us. I mean, and some of the ERAs, a lot of them, hadn't been in, the hostilities only, you see. So they weren't sort of used to this sort of thing, really. But it didn't take them long to sort of get the hang of it.
Now, who was your engine room officer, your engineer?
Well, he was a man by the name of Leach, L-E-A-C-H, Mr. Leach.
And he a lieutenant or a...
No, he was very thick. In those days, they had if you had a thin stripe, you were a warrant officer, and if you had a thick one, you were a commissioned warrant officer. In the olden days, it took you donkey's years to work your way up. But when once the war started, they grew. And nowadays, they don't have a thin stripe. Anyway, it's the thick one.
So his rank was?
He'd be a commissioned warrant engineer.
And what was Leach like?
Quite a nice chap, and knew his job, and everybody liked him. That's all I can tell
you. He knew his job. I mean, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And what about the chief ERA?
And him. And he was a chap called Harris, and he was very quiet sort of a person. Well, you can imagine there's all sorts, but he wasn't one of these... once again, we were lucky, really, because he was a nice, pleasant sort of a person. He wasn't one of these people who'd order you around, do this, do that, and far from it.
And what about the other ERAs? Had any particular friends or characters amongst them?
Well, the one that came over with me on the Queen Mary, he was an ex-sergeant in the London Metropolitan Police. And he was very tall. He was about 6'2". And he was quite used to tell me...
What was his name?
Phipps.
What was he like?
Quite a bit of a comedian in a way, very dry, but he could tell you some good stories. Now, he unfortunately died 2 or 3 years ago, but he was about... Blimey, he was about 7 years older than me anyway, so if he was alive now, he'd be heading towards 90 anyway. So, yes, and we were quite pally, mainly because we went over together, you see. So... that was that. He was, and then.
Did you have anything much to do with the electrical artificer? That was Ron Ayres.
Well,
because it was a lot of electricity in there.
Well, it's funny you should say it. And this is one of the things that completely puzzled me. When we had our first reunion, there weren't any in my branch at all there, you see. And I couldn't remember any of the names. The only names I remembered was Davison, who was the first lieutenant at the time. And then Harry Fine said to me, well, surely you must remember Ron Ayre. And I said, no, what? And he was an electrician. And he was near enough the same age as me. And he remembered me, and I couldn't remember him. Now, to me, that's something odd. Because he was, for instance, when you were in the engine room, the person on the doing the electrical side, putting everything onto the main, they would tell you, just going to put it, you know, they would warn you that they were going to do it. Well, he was one who would be, and yet I couldn't remember him at all. I don't know why, I just...
What did you think of the ship? I mean, you'd been on a big battleship, you'd been on the Harvester, a destroyer. Yeah. What did you think of the design of the ship? I know you're not, you know, but just as a sort of experienced sailor, what did you think of it?
The one thing that struck me, and maybe struck some of the others as well, or the others that had been on ships, you know, the regulars, was that to go on watch in the engine room, we didn't have to risk our lives by going on the open deck, which you did on the Harvester. It was all enclosed, you see. So you weren't getting a chance of a huge sea coming over and washing you overboard. So that I noticed that immediately. I thought, oh, that's good. And the other thing was, we had bunks instead of hammocks. Bunk, you know, you could just lower them down. You see.
What did you think of that? Cause
we thought to start with it was going to be a wonderful idea, and it wasn't bad once we got used to it. But unfortunately, our sleeping place was right forward. The only compartment ahead of it was the anchor cable compartment, and of course, when we first left New York to go on our first, heading towards Bermuda to do trials, and we immediately ran into a terrible storm and heavy seas, and we were thrown up and down, you know, this movement, up, bang, crash. And of course, lying on a bunk in a hammock, you're in on a bunk. But nevertheless, it was amazing, I suppose, because we were all quite young, how you could sort of adjust yourself. And even though, in theory, you should have got thrown out, I don't think many were, if any.
What about the all-welded construction? How did you feel about that? Because some of the older men worried about that, so they'd fall apart.
Well, it didn't worry me, and I don't think it worried them, not to my knowledge, any of my friends, you know, the rest of the engine room branch. Although there could have been some who perhaps worried about whether it would, you know, with the stretching and... But I don't think many of us worried too much. Maybe the experts worried about it. But I don't think we did.
Now, what about your mess? What was that like, the ERA mess?
Well, it...
It was right forward, you said.
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't quite as far forward as the sleeping compartment, but near... But the thing was...
Well, tell me how it was arranged. You had a sleeping compartment and a mess.
That's right.
So tell us about... Well, take the sleeping compartment first. That was the one right forward.
That's right.
What was in there? Well, how many were you in? Have you in there?
Well, it wasn't... They weren't just built for ERAs, you see. They were built for chiefs or petty officers. And therefore, as a result, it wasn't an ERA's mess. We had... other people, we had, for instance, a Stoker petty officer that I can vividly remember who was in with us. We had an ordnance artificer who was in with us, and several others I can't remember. So really...
It was a petty officer's mess.
Well, in a way, chiefs and petty... It wasn't solely an ERA's mess, you see. But we got on all right. We didn't nobody sort of bother. We had a coffee machine... Made good coffee. That was supplied. And not only that, the thing that amused us, the old poker, you know, the old poker chips. Well, they were all supplied, poker chips. And we used to play poker a bit in those days. Not for much money, mind you, but we used to, for matchsticks, I think we used, and 10 matchsticks was a penny or something. But they had the proper poker chips there.
What about the water cooler? Did you have that sort of thing?
Wait a minute. Did we have a water cooler? It's possible, but I must admit I can't.
And a laundry they're meant to have had as well.
Pardon?
And a laundry.
Oh, yeah, had a laundry, yeah. I can't place a water cooler.
What do you think of these American-style facilities? I mean, they're not on British ships, are they?
Well, they weren't then, no. I think we just accepted it. Sometimes it amused us, but we accepted it. Sometimes we thought it was a good idea. But as I say, an example, the poker chips and the coffee machine, and we were a bit amused about it in a way, but on the other hand, especially the coffee, it made really good coffees. So there you are. But I can only talk about my own personal view, and I just sort of accepted the fact that these things were going to be a bit different, and sometimes you thought, well, why do they do this? Is it necessary to do it? But at the same time, there weren't any differences which made you feel as though there was something terribly wrong somewhere. You know, everybody sort of got on all right with them. Well, most people, anyway.
Now, the ship was commissioned on 15th of July, 1945. Do you remember the ceremony at all? Or?
Only vaguely. Only vaguely. the usual rubbish. But anyway... But the thing we all remember was, of course, the trip down. The rough, you know, how rough it was. Ooh,
on the
it was
way to
shocking.
On the way to Bermuda.
Shocking it was.
Did you have any sea trials before that?
No, well, these were part of them, you see. These were part of the trials on the way down.
What do you remember of that rough weather? Because the ships rolled a lot, didn't they?
It wasn't the rolling bit so much. It was the up and down, you know, up and down like this, and then shuddering down all this. One thing that really did them, I can never forget this, because I was quite surprised. Now, I was never what one would call a good sailor. I told you, didn't I, previously, I got used to it eventually. Now, on this particular trip, there were only two people out of the whole mess, and that, you know, the stoker pit, all the rest of them, who would even drink a cup of tea, and I was one of them. Everybody else were too queer. That included the chief ERA, who normally wasn't. And you're drinking, the tea was going up and down like this. I can remember. It was quite comical. And I thought to myself then, I thought, well, that's amazing, because I was never, I'd got used to it, but I would never, if someone had said to me on this particular trip, you are going to be one or two people who are not going to be seasick, I would have said, oh, don't make me laugh. And yeah, I was, but a minute, I don't know what that means. But it was really shocking. It was, nobody ate anything. You couldn't eat anything. And it was a real shocker. Harry Fine probably, has he ever told you about it himself? They all remember it. Well, they should, shouldn't they? It didn't matter what part of the ship you were on. But with us, sleeping forward, you can imagine, you could hear the anchor chains rattling in its cable. A great time was had by all.
You got to Bermuda, I think in late August, early September, and you were there for sort of trials and working up trials. What do you remember of those? What sort of things were you doing?
Well, the usual full steam trials, and then I think they'd, I might be wrong, and checking the guns and the depth charges, etc., etc. And oh yeah, all the usual sort of things that they do when they're.
What did it involve for you as engine room staff?
I can remember on one occasion, this was very early on, when they dropped a pattern of depth charges, and it shook the power off the board. You with me? Electrical power, temporarily, but it didn't last long. But they sorted that out. And this was obviously the idea, isn't it, of these trials, you know, that sort of thing. They check all these sort of things, and and try to find out why this happened and why this so-and-so happened, and that
so
was it.
So what would you do when they lost electric? Well, that would mean the engine stopped, would it?
No, it didn't actually. But it was the electrical branch sorted that out, and it didn't take them long to do it either. It was sort of off and back on within, a minute, something like that, you see. But obviously they were going to be a bit worried about it to start with, because I thought, well, if we drop the debt. But to my memory, it didn't happen again.
They sorted the problem out.
So obviously, whatever it was, yeah, they sorted it out.
Were there any problems with the engines during the sort of full-speed trials?
Well, I can't remember any, to be quite honest. Not to my knowledge.
Do you remember the abandoned ship trials? That they actually, you know, in the harbour, practised abandoning ship and jumping overboard and things.
Yeah, I don't remember that, to be quite honest. I think Harry Fine mentioned that to me, and I said, no, I can't.
What about damage control exercises? Were you involved in them?
Well, we each had a damage control position.
What was yours?
Well, mine was usually, if we were going into action, I was usually, we had to go down the boiler room. And that was it, I was down the boiler room. But there were all sorts of other positions where certain valves somebody who'd be manning that particular valve, and somebody else man. I think the engineer officer would be down the engine room, and the chief, they'd be down the engine room, and then we'd all have the various positions, various valves to. If a compartment needed flooding, you had to know how to open this valve quickly, and et cetera, et cetera. But as I say, my usual one on practically every ship was in the down the boiler room.
And any other exercises you remember? One thing about it was it wasn't very well gunned, was it? I mean, they only had 3-inch guns. And they did you have any opinion about things like that? You'd been on a more powerful British destroyer.
We probably did, but I must admit that right at this particular moment, I can't sort of think what my opinion was at the time.
Did you get ashore at all?
Well, in Bermuda? Oh, yes. They had a bit of a naval battle where they played tombola, and we could amble up to this place. They sold drinks as well, and we used to go up there now and again, have a game of tombola, and we were quite amused actually at one of the chaps who used to call out, one of the callers out. He had some comical sort of all sorts of comical things to say with this tombola business, and that amused us. And on the way, you could hear these crickets, the noise of crickets, and you know, these insects. And of course, things we hadn't seen, or most of us hadn't seen, bananas growing. And that sort of thing was a novelty for us. And I swam the longest distance I've ever swam while we were in Bermuda, but mainly because there were several of us went in for a swim, and two or three of them were exceptionally good swimmers, so I thought, well, if I get into any trouble, I'll be all right. You know, and I just took it easy enough, and I was quite pleased. I total distance of about a mile, which I never thought I'd ever be able to swim, but mind you, the water was quite calm and nice and warm, so yeah, so I can remember that bit, but that was just from a personal point of view. Yeah, I can't remember how long we were in Bermuda. We must have been in there a couple of weeks, I think.
You left on 8th of September.
Yeah, so we were round about there.
What do you remember then? I think you went up to Norfolk, Virginia, to pick up the Victorious. And then you went back to sort of via...
Yeah, no, that's a funny thing. That's another thing. Harry Fine mentioned this. Is that still on? Do you want it on while I'm telling you this?
Well, we're not interested in Harry Fine, just what you remember.
Yeah, well, that's it. I don't.
That's fine. What's the next thing you remember?
He was on about this. Yeah. Well, the next thing I remember, of course, is when we got back in the other side. Way back, you see, to Belfast.
So that's the next thing you remember?
More or less, yeah.
Now, that's when you joined the 4th Escort Group.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Okay.
And you were based at Pollock Dock.
I can't remember the name of the dock, but yeah, in Belfast.
And what was it like as a base, Belfast and
Pollock Dock? As far as I was concerned, it was all right, because I had my wife there. This is my first wife, by the way, you see. She was there, and... So, as soon as we got in, I was off with a chant, you know, I was off for sure, you see, and that was it. And then I'm just trying to think what our first trip.
So, your shore leave would be spent, had she booked lodgings?
Oh yeah, yes, right, yeah.
So you'd spend it in shore leave?
That's right, that's it, yeah. Whereas all the others would be going out drinking up and all the rest of it. I didn't.
Now, the first big convoy, I think, was when in the Bay of Biscay. And it was sort of this this business of the convoy being attacked by a wolf pack.
Well,
now, you were in the engine room. I mean, you don't have that good a perspective, I suppose, on most of these things. But what do you remember of that?
The thing I remember about the first convoy was when we had our first ping sounding of a submarine. And naturally, there were depth charges fired all around, etc., etc., etc. And we were all at action stations, so forth and so on. And I didn't really know a lot about it, you see. But
would you know what was going on from your perspective?
Not really. I wouldn't know. Up on the bridge, perhaps, they would... You know, anybody on the upper... Obviously, they'd know. But I didn't really know. We just... you get the alarm sound, submarine, you know, anti-submarine alarm, and that's it. Everybody dashes down to their action stations, and that's it. And you just hope for the...
Now, your action station...
for the best, then.
What was your action station?
Well, my action station would be either in the boiler room, or if I was on watch, I'd be in the engine room. And then
much the same as your normal duties.
That's right. And then you'd hope for the best, and then the all clear would go. And unless you were on watch anyway, you'd come up. And that was it.
Now, what was your daily routine like on the Calder, if you remember? I mean, the day would be organising watches, which the same.
Yeah, that's right. You'd be normally in three watches, unless you were one of the lucky ones who were not watchkeeping, and you were the one who was doing the day work. You see, in which case you'd get up about 7 o'clock, have your breakfast, and any jobs, the chief ERA would be the one who'd allocate you the jobs. He'd say, "Oh, I want you to do so and so and so and so or so and so." And that's it. And you do that, and then you go back lunchtime, have your meal, and then in the afternoon, and then you'd finish, in theory, say...
What sort of things might he ask you to do?
Anything that could be done without interfering with the progress of the ship. In other words, you might... they might have discovered that a fire main valve joint was leaking, you see, and you could find that you could isolate that particular portion. If you couldn't, you couldn't do anything about it for the time being, because you dare. But usually you could isolate a portion, right, and then, you know, the chief would say, "I want you to have a look at so-and-so, and the joint's leaking badly," and then you'd do that. You'd sort of take it off. And then if it could be repaired fairly easily, you'd do it. But if it was a big job, it needed a lot of things, then you'd either have to fit a blank on that particular part off for the time being. But usually, 9 times out of 10, you could do the job without interfering with the general running of the ship. Or it might be, for instance, the chief cook or somebody might run up and say there's something, that one of the steam lines in the galley or something is leaking. Anything, and if you could do that, similarly, by blanking off a piece, you'd do it, you see. On one occasion, I had to do? One of the heads was blocked. And I had to unblock that. Well, I did. But anything that could be done, as I say, without interfering with the normal...
And that was the non-watchkeeping ERA.
That's right, yeah.